24 and a half minutes after the hour on a Broken Road Radio Transcendent Tuesday. We're joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don, a resident of Garden Valley, Texas. He's a biochemist, a member of the board at Creation Moments, and a good friend of the station. As we say, he's the only scientist, the only actual real scientist that we have on staff here. But he's a volunteer. You know, we don't pay him the big bucks he usually gets. If by wearing his white lab coat around.
Yeah. Well, those days are over. I'm retired from that.
We're here this morning to talk about evolution. And, you know, we've tackled the subject of evolution multiple times over the last 9 years on the station with you, Don. And so often it's like a shotgun approach. It's this little bit of information and that's this little bit of information. But this article from the Institute for Creation Research kind of organizes the evolution problem, the challenge to evolutionists, into three areas. Can you explain? One of them is stardust. Tell us about stardust.
Well, okay. And there's multiple areas where evolution falls down. Matter of fact, evolution doesn't stand up to any scrutiny if one really looks into it carefully. Of course, the first one is for evolution, for Big Bang to have occurred, it has to occur from nothing. So you get matter and energy from nothing, which intuitively doesn't feel very good from a naturalistic point of view, because it actually goes against one of the physical laws, which is the law of conservation of energy, that matter and energy can be exchanged. Energy can form matter, as Einstein, E is equal to mc squared, where m is matter, c is the speed of light. So, you can convert one to the other, but to say that there was nothing and then all of a sudden we got everything that we see in the universe is pretty far-fetched. And so that's one enigma, for example, or that's one hurdle that the evolutionists have to overcome. And they say, one way is that the laws of physics as we know it today were completely different at the moment all of this came into being. And so the laws were different. And so if the laws were different, then anything can go. And we know evolution is, and this is this is what they'll tell you all the time. We know evolution is true because obviously we look around and everything is here, and we've got plants and we've got animals and we've got people. So evolution had to be true, and it's the natural explanation for things. Any other explanation is not a natural explanation. And of course, as we talked about before, science is only talking about natural explanations. Well, the other hurdle, so you say, all right, well, maybe everything didn't come from nothing, but maybe matter and energy was here from the beginning, for eternity. In other words, it's just changed forms over time. But then you run into another law. It's called the law of entropy. And the best way to describe entropy is you have a room. So you have a room and it's got bookshelves on it and it's got bins for toys, and then you put a young child in the room and everything is in order, and you put a young child in the room and you kind of close the door and let the young child kind of explore, and pretty soon all of the books are on the floor and all the toys are on the floor, and the order that you originally had in the room has become chaotic. Well, that's the law of entropy, that everything is driving towards disorder. And the only way to get more order is to, the parent has to go in there and put energy back into the system and some type of rational organization into the system in order for that room to become ordered again. And, you know, those of us who've had parent who are parents and had, in our case, seven kids, so we went through a lot of this. You wind up spending a lot of energy doing this. And so, but the law of entropy says that everything is going to become disordered. So if the universe, for example, and everything in it was always there, then it should be completely random by now, instead of having the order that we see today. Well, okay, so let's get past that and say, okay, we've had matter, we've created matter somehow, and now we have the complication of going from stardust or from dirt into living cells. And evolutionists will say, well, yeah, we don't know how that happened, but again, you know, since we see it and we've got living cells, then it must have happened, and those living cells had to form into all of the animals and the plants that we see today, and voila, we've got everything. So there's a lot of hand waving in evolution, but they don't explain how the first, if there was a first, living cell, how did that first living cell come to be? Once you have that first living cell, of course, they call it the primordial soup, and that first living cell then became multicelled, and then the multicelled differentiated into the various sea creatures, and then one of the sea creatures, or several of them, walked out of the sea and developed legs, and the legs became lizards, and the lizards, became various other animals, and birds began to fly, and everything else that we see. It's just one story after the next, and it's not anything built on science. It's all based on one's imagination, and that brings us to the third point. And the third point has to do with really a spiritual kind of an emotional, a soul type of quality that is created in man, for example, in mankind. And you've got this element, for example, that animals and humans can run, but it's only the human who can actually train for a marathon or for a triathlon, for example. Both animals and humans can misbehave, but it's only humans who can repent and ask for forgiveness. It's both animals and humans can communicate, but it's only man who can write things down and have thoughts and communicate those thoughts to future generations. So there, and of course, we don't see animals, for example, creating wonderful works of art, and for what purpose other than just, hey, that's beautiful, and I want to create works of art. So we're left with, for example, that there is some difference from man than animals. And how did that difference come about? Did that difference come about over eons of time and slowly, and for some reason it was beneficial to man and to humans to be able to paint lovely pictures or to produce beautiful things or any of these other aspects of humans that I've described? What benefit of painting a beautiful picture of a flower or things of a sunset or things that man was seeing? What benefit is that to man as opposed to, having communication between humans and things like that?
Well, in a sense, this is the philosophical end of the argument, and it's probably the most interesting one to me, because I'm wondering about, science typically tackles the question what and how, but rarely why. And when you talk about natural evidence or occurring in nature, I think we're talking about evidence that's derived empirically, things you can see, taste, hear, smell, measure, and count. That's tougher when it comes to determining the nature of the creator. Can one be objective in evaluating the presence or non-presence of a creator?
Well, you know, of course, our information about the creator comes from the Bible and from what God inspired man to write down in the Bible. And from, of course, the Creator himself, Jesus, in John 1:3, it says everything was created through him and nothing was created, that wasn't created by him. So everything was created through Jesus. And we know, of course, in Genesis 1:3 that, Jesus or God said, let there be light, and there was light. And so he created everything. He spoke everything into existence. And so, how then can we prove that there is a God? Well, the scripture says that the heavens declare the glory of God, and his creation speaks of him. His creation speaks of a creator, because the created things that we see, that we feel, that we touch, the even the creative things in plants, it's so complex that man couldn't even possibly come close to creating anything that like God has created. We try hard, and then we design, we put together computers that have tremendous computing power, but still it is a human, a created human, that puts the intelligence into the artificial intelligence in machines. But when push comes to shove, a computer can only spit out information that man has programmed into it. And if man didn't program into it, then it's not going to spit out new unforeseen information. It can analyze all kinds of data, but it's not creating itself.
Okay, and, let me take a different tact with this, because I'm trying to decide on the difference between objective and subjective. I suspect that an evolutionist would say, well, if you're a creationist, that's subjective. You can believe that if you choose to, but there's no objective evidence for it. On the other hand, I would say that even outside the Bible, people groups historically with no knowledge of the Bible, or Jews, or the history the Fertile Crescent, if they didn't have that information to go by, they almost unavoidably invented their own God, or created their own story of a supernatural creation. They didn't know about Jesus necessarily, but they had a sense that there was something greater than themselves. Is that objective or subjective? Because there's that great big hole that we all have that only God can fill.
Right. Well, I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's intuitively or innately, we know that there had to be a creator of the things that we see around us. And, in ancient times, the problem with, today is that we live, I don't live in the city, but still, many, many people live in the city, and there's light pollution, and you can't see the billions of stars, trillions of stars that are out there, that if you were in the desert, for example, and there was no light around, you would see the billions and trillions of stars out there, and you would go, my goodness, there's a lot of stuff out in space. But we live in these cities, and we don't see that. Maybe we see some of the brightest stars, and sometimes we see a planet or two, and we definitely can see the moon. But you know, the all of the other stars associated with it, you know, we can't necessarily see. And that's just the universe that we're looking at. That's just our you know, community out in space that we're seeing. But you know, I one has to certainly contemplate, and it's a fundamental question of origin as to, hey, you know, how did this plant get there? I mean, why are there flowers? And why are there bees that get attracted to certain types of, and insects that get attracted to certain types of plants, but not to others? I mean, how did all of this come about? And the natural, I mean, the intuitive explanation is that, well, there had to be a creator to create all of these things, and we have to go against our intuition, our natural innate, you know, understanding in order to say, no, no, this all came about by chance. And it really, you know, boggles the mind that one could say that this all came about by chance when you look at the wonderful, you know, creative world around us. And so, you know, I think you can objectively observe something, and the more and greater scientific tools that we have to look deeper and deeper, for example, within the cell, or to look further and further out in space, we have to come to the same conclusion, and we see again the glory of God that is declared in everything that is around us. And just the delicate balance in, you know, in the Earth, for example, or around the Earth, the atmosphere, the tilt, the tilting of the Earth that gives us the seasons, and creates for us a more habitable areas, you know, on the planet, you know, just all of the things that make up the universe that we live in, one has to blindly say, no, I'm going to ignore all of the evidence, and I'm going to come up with my own story that everything just evolved because, you know, it all started with Charles Lyell and Darwin. And the finches, and I mean, even Darwin goes to the Galapagos, and he only spends about a month or so on that trip, and there was, of course, time for sailing and everything, and, you know, he sees these finches, and he says, aha, this is the answer to everything. These finches with the different sized beaks show that, you know, we've got evolution going on. We've got one form changing into another, but they're all finches, and it's only, yes, natural selection is a process that happens when there's environmental pressure, but we don't have a finch turning into a frog or to a tortoise or anything. You know, a finch is still a finch, and bacteria is still a bacteria. You know, even though, you know, you may get some changes in a bacteria, it's still a bacteria. If the bacteria, you know, figures out, not doesn't have any intelligence to it, but if there, you have a large enough population of bacteria and you treat it with an antibiotic, and some of the bacteria survive because they have a defect in the mechanism by which the antibiotic is acting, and therefore, you know, survive, doesn't mean that they've gained information. It means that they actually have lost information, and they are innately surviving because of you're selecting out a certain population of the bacteria. And that's basically natural selection. I mean, natural selection doesn't push for more information. It pushes, the information is already there in the organism, and it's just selecting out certain populations from the greater population that was there.
You know, you bring out another interesting. I'm sorry. Go ahead, David.
I'm finding that, you know, that your description of things going on, and I'm finding that this discussion about where did the Wuhan flu come from? Did it spring all by itself to just jump out of a seafood market because all the right elements were there in the process, and then all of a sudden coronavirus just jumped up and created itself? It's never happened before. And we looked at gain of function research and all the rest of it. Somebody is manipulating the information. Mm-hmm. It sounds like they're playing the music, Don.
Yeah, it does. It's that does. Time. And we don't have time to get into that subject.
We should do that. We should point to that next week. But Don, you do bring up an interesting question, at least in my mind. In ancient times, were there evolutionists?
Mm. Uh-huh.
They were humanists, but could they at some point, 1,000 years ago, look to the heavens and say, "Oh, it just happened"? Something tells me no.
That is an interesting question. We know that the early scientists, for example, all of the great early scientists, believed in God, because in order to undertake a scientific study, you have to believe that there's order to the system, and who brought the order? Well, it was the Creator God.
The point of the natural sciences was to see how God did things.
Yes. Somehow there's no point in looking if you think that everything was random.
Somehow we drifted away. Don Clark, a member of the board of Creation Moments, I want to mention their website, creationmoments.com, and there is a veritable library of scientific justification, explanation, information about the biblical story of creation. And you really ought to check them out, creationmoments.com. You can link to it from brokenroadradio.com if you're listening there this morning. Don, we thank you as always. We'll look forward to next Tuesday. And I know we've talked about COVID many times. Maybe we should gravitate back. That sounds like a very scientific thing to do. And talk about COVID next week. Because there's new stuff out now, new research. And we've got more to deal with. So let's consider that for next week, and we'll see you.
Okay, a good week. Sounds great. You folks have a great week.
Bye-bye. See you next week, Don.
Bye-bye.